For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg! Good morning, Manitoba! For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg live on location, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Pleased to be with you for the next couple hours, talking about the Winnipeg Jets, talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs, talking about everything under the sun and whatever might come to your mind. Pleased to see so many familiar faces joining us as they always do in the chat room. If you're new here, if you haven't already done so, be sure to get into that chat room, join the conversation, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends, tell your family. The place to be every Saturday morning is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Good to see both of you gentlemen on this Saturday morning. How are things in Casa Minuk, Mr. Dave?
I was not expecting you to go to me first. You usually go to Ezzy. Things are good
here. Ezzy's already annoyed me. We're 3 minutes into the show. I think I've yelled at him a couple times already. He's annoyed me. I wanted to go with you first.
All right. Well, I'll take it. And Ezzy is live on location, so we'll let him reveal where that is exactly. No, things are good. I mean, no Ez, so the commercial breaks won't be nearly as fun without Ez. But it's nice to see the sun is out there and going to be out for at least another week. So I see already in the chat some folks are listening outside. I think it was Sandy said she was outside listening to the show, and we've got some folks biking and listening to the show. So hey, fantastic! And let's do a couple of hours of hockey talk, and then we will be able to go outside and enjoy the sun.
Very well said, Mr. Dave. Ezra, good morning. I say begrudgingly to you, live on location. Tell the good folks where you are on this Saturday morning.
Well, I've been made, guys. I mean, it's already out there. Kenny's water bottle figured it out. I was here 3 weeks ago, so obviously everyone who is watching that show knows I'm at Bernstein's. But you guys know this, but we should probably remind, you know, our viewers and listeners, Bernstein's Deli is closing down June 16th. So less than 2 weeks from now.
They're closing for renovations temporarily. They'll still be back, but just closing temporarily.
You didn't let me finish. Obviously, I didn't say closing down permanently, Drew. They're going to be renovating the restaurant. So they're going to be closed for approximately 6 to 8 weeks. So, you know, I got to get all my Legal Curve sandwiches in here. But for now, I'm just having a little coffee and I'm going to have a little breakfast later. So Aaron has arranged a nice little spot here for me in the deli. You can see behind me that my computer is plugged in, so my computer is not going to be shutting off, boys. You don't have to worry about that. But I echo what Dave said. And, you know, you mentioned the Stanley Cup playoffs, the conference finals, guys. You know, I was reading on social media, a couple of writers were saying, you know, like the skill level has never been better. Sure, I agree with that when you're talking about, you know, McDavid, Draisaitl, McKinnon, Shesterkin, everything like that. But to me, I mean, it hasn't been the best start to the conference finals. Like, you got to have a split. You can't have two series where the teams are down 2-0. Colorado was absolutely manhandling the Edmonton Oilers. But to me, the playoffs have been pretty disappointing. Like, Battle of Alberta was great. I mean, the first round was okay. But, like, where are the overtimes? Like, for me, I realize I'm starting a bit on a tangent here, boys, but, I mean, I just think there haven't been enough series that have gone to 7 games, and there haven't been enough overtime games. So, I mean, we'll see what Edmonton's able to do, in game 3, and we'll see what, you know, the Lightning are able to do. But both of these teams, their backs are against the wall. We know when you're down 2-0, it's really tough to come back. Just wanted to get that in there. I feel like the playoffs, to me, just from a competitive standpoint, I'm not talking about the skill on the ice, just, you know, how good the hockey has been and how close the series have been. Like, to me, a series isn't really a series, unless it goes to 6 or 7 games, and the Battle of Alberta couldn't even get to 6 games. So that's all I'm saying. Maybe people disagree with me.
Yeah, playing the role of Debbie Downer on this Saturday morning is Mr. Ginsberg, which is unusual. He's usually effervescent and positive, but nonetheless, it's a role reversal of sorts, but we can live with that. Let's get started, as we do each and every Saturday, by talking about the Winnipeg Jets. And Trots Watch, it doesn't have any news to that effect on it this week. It was still the sort of same holding period, waiting period, as you know, what Barry Trotz decides to do when he decides to do something is likely to be the domino that will get everything started. That said, there wasn't much news as it pertains to Barry Trotz, but there was news as it pertained to the Winnipeg Jets assistant coach. That, of course, that I'm speaking about is Scott Arneil, who is not yet officially a Winnipeg Jets assistant coach, but there seems to be a lot of smoke surrounding that, so you'd assume that there's also some fire, that Scott Arneil is going to join the next coaching staff and be behind the bench of whomever is the head coach for the Winnipeg Jets this upcoming season. Our buddy Murat Ateş reported that it was basically a done deal. He reported that in The Athletic. Elliot Friedman in 32 Thoughts, the written version, said that it's not quite done, but it seems to be pointing that way. Mm-hmm. So my question for you guys, and Dave, I'll start with you because I like to do things a little bit different on this Saturday morning. Why the seeming desperation on the True North organization side to get Scott Arneil into the fold?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. As far as I know, Scott Arneil still has a contract with the Washington Capitals. I don't think he's a free agent quite yet, so I'm not even sure he's been released by the Capitals in order to pursue that opportunity. So we'll see about that. I mean, again, my feeling would be that they're trying to create a succession plan, if you will, for Barry Trotz, because as everyone knows, he doesn't want to be a head coach for very long, wants to move into management. So I suspect there's that thought process from the Winnipeg Jets that, look, we're going to offer you this opportunity. And Friedman clarified, you know, that a lot of times, because there seemed to be a lot of consternation based on what Murat wrote, the idea that the organization would select the assistant coaches or associate coaches, we don't know what Arneil would be, for Barry in advance of Barry Trotz. And so, you know,
in advance of any head coach.
Well, sure. I mean, people, to be honest with you, I don't think after Barry Trotz, I'm not so sure people are going to care, in this market, if the head coach is Kirk Muller or Scott Arneil or Pascal Vincent, it doesn't make a difference, right?
Barry Trotz is
Dave Minuk. The Trotz watch. And that's what everybody is focused on in Manitoba, as well as in Texas, as well as in Michigan, as well as in Nevada, and possibly in Florida, so, and Pennsylvania. So the reality is that he is the Stanley Cup of head coaches right now. And so that was the concern. Why would you hire someone without him having a say? My feeling, and again, I don't have any insight other than my own conjecture, but my speculation would be that any sort of move in that nature would have been mentioned potentially in these conversations they've had with Barry Trotz. Hey, you know, we're thinking about this. I just don't see that type of move being made, even though I know the organization and other organizations have had that sort of latitude to make a selection of the assistant or associate coaches without, for example, Wade Flaherty is likely to be back. You know, that's not someone Barry Trotz would have handpicked, right? Obviously, he works with Mitch Korn. So to me, that move would have probably been done in conjunction. Hey, just so you know, this is what we're thinking. And again, my only thought process would be you're doing that because he's going to be, in theory, your next guy behind Barry Trotz. If Barry Trotz lasts, let's say, 3 or 4 years.
And just wanted to say one thing here. You know, Dave mentioned, you know, Arneil is under contract. He's been the assistant coach at Washington for the last 4 years. And then it was also mentioned by Dave, you know, whether Arneil would be the associate or assistant. Well, we know that Arneil was the associate coach in New York. Who is the head coach? Alain Vigneault, right? So as soon as Elliot talked about Scott Arneil, that's kind of where my mind went. Like, we know the connection between Scott Arneil and Alain Vigneault, right? Head coach, associate coach. So you wonder, you know, if Barry Trotz isn't hired by the Jets, again, you're right, Dave, this is all conjecture. Nobody really knows right now, guys. You know, is Trotz really, you know, is he leaning towards Vegas, right? Emily Kaplan of ESPN had the report saying that she was hearing that executives in the NHL were hearing that, you know, there might be a side deal in place for Trotz to be hired. Well, I mean, that's not really definitive, right? That seems pretty speculative to me as well.
I'm also not sure why it needs to be a side deal if there's a deal in place.
Yeah, that's what made no sense.
It's funny you mentioned that, Drew, because I thought of that too. Like, why is that? What makes that a side deal? Isn't that just a deal?
Yeah, it's not like he's the coach of a team currently and then his contract's up and it's going to be a side deal.
Let's be realistic. The only side deal Vegas has ever had is with Mark Stone. Hey, we're going to give you this you know, 8-year contract after you sign with us versus what Winnipeg is prepared to offer Ottawa and you'll eventually get. So I agree. I remember when I saw that you mentioned the Emily Kaplan thing, and I thought to myself, like, it also seems very unusual because to Drew's point, why do you need a side deal? I mean, you don't need a side deal. This would be the deal. And it's I think you just used the wrong language, because to me it's an offer, because unless he's accepted it, like, why? And more importantly, I just don't see why he would go around and do a dog and pony show and say, hey, I'll meet with Dallas, but I've already got a side deal in place. No, you have an offer that's very promising that you're most likely to take. I mean, to call it a side deal makes no sense, because what would stop you from doing it right now? Do it tomorrow. You don't have to. So
do it in the next 5 minutes, and you give us content for the next hour and 55 minutes.
Bingo.
I'm fine with that as well. It's just, yeah, the report there, and as I'll let you finish your point. Yeah, the report there and the language used, I found to be curious, because it didn't make a ton of sense to me.
No, I don't think it made a lot of sense to a lot of people here. I'm hoping that wasn't the fire alarm that just went off here, but it possibly could be, because we are in close to a kitchen here. But just getting back to what I was saying before, guys, like, I think right now, I mean, Jets fans are kind of, you know, they're on the edge of their seats, right? Because they're following every little bit of news, and we're obviously, you know, covering it on illegalcurve.com. Elliot does a great job. There's nobody that, you know, is in the know more than him, and guys like Darren Dreger and Pierre LeBrun, right? Frank Saravalli, Chris Johnston, should mention them as well. They do a great job. But right now, it seems like, you know, he's taking his time, and that's what we've heard, that, you know, Trotz is going to take his time. And, you know, another week has passed. I mentioned this on last week's show, boys. Like, I don't think that Trotz is going to wait till July or August, maybe like early July, something like that. But I don't think he's necessarily going to wait like another month or 2 months, because you have to think that these teams, you know, want to have their coach in place as soon as possible. I don't think the draft is like a milestone or anything like that. I just think that, you know, teams want to, because if they don't get Barry Trotz, well, they're going to have to look at plan B, right? And if it's the Jets, it could be Alain Vigneault, could be Pascal Vincent. You know, I guess it could be a guy like Kirk Muller. There's a lot of potential names out there, right? So I would have to think that, you know, June 4th today, I would have to think that within the next couple of weeks, we're going to find out. Maybe, you know, within the next 3 to 5 days, who knows?
Yeah, I would agree with your timeline there. Going back to you know, the Scott Arneil talk, though, that, you know, aside from him having been a member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 and obviously having some ties to the True North organization, I'm not certain, you know, what his bona fides are that make him such an in-demand individual for the organization. I mean, and I'd be lying if I said that, you know, I knew a lot about his job as an assistant coach. I know that when he was the head coach in Columbus, you know, it was not well regarded. The team wasn't very good. I don't think he did a great job behind the bench as the head coach in Columbus. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he's a master technician or a master tactician. I don't know. I haven't seen any evidence or heard any chatter to that effect. I haven't heard that he's a master motivator that can maybe change the tune of a dressing room or change the feeling in a dressing room. It's just odd to me that, you know, that there seems to be this premium on getting him into the organization for reasons that I'm not certain of. And admittedly, I could be wrong. It certainly won't be the first time, and it won't be the last time. But I find the I'm going to use the word desperation to get a deal done with him as just odd, Ezzy.
I don't know why you're saying it's odd, Drew. Like, he's been, like you mentioned, you know, Columbus. That was over 10 years ago, right? Like, sure, it didn't go very well, but like, that wasn't a very good roster, right?
No,
like,
the team wasn't very good. But have you heard him mentioned as a potential head coach anywhere?
Right, but
else?
I don't think we're talking about him as a potential head coach of the Jets. I think we're talking about him as an assistant or associate coach. At least that's what I read, you know, when I was reading Elliot Friedman's thoughts. I don't think he said that, you know, the Jets are bringing him in as their head coach if they don't get Barry Trotz. To me, it was they're bringing him into the coaching staff, which would mean assistant or associate coach. I guess there's a chance, but I the way I have interpreted Elliot Friedman's reporting is that Arneil would be hired as an assistant or associate, Dave. I might be wrong about that.
No, and I think you are right.
Sorry, Dave.
I'm going to finish.
And he's a veteran. And sorry, I just wanted to say, like, you know, look at the Rangers and Capitals teams. Like, mm-hmm. You know, these teams have had success. They've been playoff teams. I mean, they haven't won the Stanley Cup. And look at Arneil. I mean, we know he was the head coach of the Moose. He actually coached St. Paul's High School. I don't know if a lot of people knew that, as an assistant coach during the lockout year in Winnipeg. Before he became the Moose head coach, they were just, you know, I mean, it was Scott Arneal, so I think St. Paul's was happy to have him, right? Mm-hmm. But and his son was on the team as well. But I think, you know, the ties between Arneal and True North are clearly evident, right? And, you know, this is a smart hockey guy. This is a guy that knows the game really well. He's been involved in it his whole life. As you mentioned, going back to, you know, being a really good player for the Jets 1.0. So are there other, you know, qualified assistant coaches? Yeah, there's a bunch. And Dave, you know, could point to, you know, 10 to 15 in the AHL that are just knocking at the door to get into the NHL, right? Like a guy like Eric Dubois, right, for example, or Marty Johnston. So I think, you know, in this particular case, the Jets have identified him as someone that, you know, can serve that associate role and, you know, bring some new blood into the organization. I realize it's old blood, but you know what I mean? Yeah. He hasn't been here in a long time. So
that's the problem.
He's a very well-regarded head coach. Pardon me. A very well-regarded assistant coach.
And let's just like be very clear. You have no idea what he does in any of these markets. You know why? Because we don't even know what the hell the assistant coaches do in our own market. So for anyone to pretend, anyone in Manitoba to pretend that they have any idea what's going on in Washington or New York or anywhere else is BS, to be honest with you. Like, nobody knows. I mean, again, it's almost impossible. Like, you can pay attention to what Charlie Huddy does and know, okay, you know, he hasn't been a very good defensive coach. The defensemen haven't X. You know, you can say you feel – you know about any of these guys, Jamie Compan, like, you can say because you understand because you pay attention to what they're doing. But I think it's a bridge too far to suggest that I have no insight. I'm not going to pretend like I do. I can't tell you anything about Scott Arneal's tenure in Washington or in New York. I mean, as he's right, those teams have done well and the teams have gotten better. Is it because of Scott Arneal? I have no idea, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, and first of all, as he's 100%, like, I don't care if the guy is tied to True North. Like, it doesn't make a difference. That doesn't, like, for some reason, folks automatically think that should disqualify someone. Now, I understand people think that they're going to give a guy that opportunity simply because they have a tie. And you maybe you're right for believing that. But I don't think it's a disqualifier to suggest that someone who is has some connectivity to Manitoba would necessarily mean that they're not qualified. And again, I don't really care that a guy had a bad go around on a bad Columbus team. You know, I mean, look, guys get opportunities and they can run with it. So a guy can run with, you know, John Cooper, you know, his first head coaching job has been excellent. But I mean, he's had some pretty good Tampa teams, right? So, I mean, mm-hmm. It's easy to point to him and say, oh, well, he had success right out of the gate. Well, there's a lot of coaches who
also had Stamkos, Kucherov, Hedman, Vasilevsky. Well,
that's my whole point.
Makes the guy look really good.
Yeah. And so there's opportunity for coaches to have good teams and, hey, you can get a lot out of them, or you can have bad teams. I mean, look at Jeff Blassel, right, in Detroit. He's had terrible Red Wings teams, and he's tried to get them going. But the reality is, it's when you have a dearth of talent the way they did for so many years. After
what is he supposed to do with that group of defensemen, right?
Well, that's what I mean, right? And so the reality is, again, you have to see what these guys can do, and that's where you have an opportunity to talk to other people in markets, get an assessment as to what his role is. I mean, again, like I said, I couldn't even tell you what Scott Arneal does with the Capitals, really. Like, I'm just saying, like, it's hard to be able to define him without having some sort more of context. So I'm just saying, like, everybody just seems to be so fixated on, oh my God, this guy, like, Pascal Vincent might get an interview. Well, he was connected to True North, or Alain Vigneault, or, you know, any of these guys. I mean, the truth is the reality is you don't have to rush to make a decision because there are, I mean, I think that's one of the things that Friedman's been talking about. There are so many good head coaches out there that you don't have to worry about running to it, Drew. I'm just saying, like, I just don't think that everybody has to lose their minds over who cares, is an assistant coach or an associate coach.
I think people might feel, I mean, the team that's most recently associated with only hiring, you know, people from their own family for the longest time were the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, you mm-hmm. remember, you know, not this edition, not the last couple of years, obviously.
Yeah, Jay Woodcroft has looked terrible with them.
Well, I mean, going back before that, I mean, before they brought in Ken Holland, they only hired ex-Oilers for a while from the 80s glory days. You remember, you know, it was when Kevin Lowe was in charge and he hired Craig McTavish and he hired all of his buddies. And it just, you know, I think people are concerned that True North might go down a similar path or might be leaning towards going down a similar path. Now, if they choose to go down that path, there's no guarantee that they're going to have as poor results as they did in Edmonton for all those years. So, you know, but I think that is sort of the, that is where I think a lot of the worry maybe originates from. Look, I agree with exactly what you said there, Dave. I have no idea if Scott O'Neill's a good assistant coach or not. He very well might be. He's been around the league for a long time, and maybe he's got a skill set, a unique skill set that, you know, that I'm not familiar with because I haven't been paying that much attention to the assistant coach goings on in New York or in Washington. And maybe it's an asset that the Jets could bring in, and everyone, you know, was saying, yes, you know, this is an important hire. It very well could be the case. I just, the timing of it is a little bit odd to me in that it seems like he's coming in regardless of who the next head coach is.
Well, fair enough, Drew, but the only reason why we're hearing about it is because Elliot Friedman is leaking these things like on a weekly basis. And I realize that's his job. That's why he's paid the big bucks. But again, we don't exactly know, you know, what the title is going to be, first of all. And going back to what Dave said, there's a lot to unpack here with Scott O'Neill boys, right? But going back to what Dave said, there were three assistants this year. That's kind of what Dave was getting at. Like, it's not as clear as, you know, when you have a head coach, associate coach, assistant coach. So right now it's a little bit unclear. But, you know, just another thing too with Scott O'Neill, he joined the Capitals after Barry Trotz moved on to the island, right? So for people that are wondering if there's like a Trotz O'Neill connection there from Washington, there actually isn't. He went to Long Island, not to say that Barry Trotz couldn't be hired, and then Scott O'Neill is either your associate or assistant coach. But kind of going back to this idea, I mean, I don't agree at all that the Oilers are the only team, you know, that hires former players. Like, St. Louis Blues assistant coach is Steve Ott. Well, who did Steve Ott used to play for? The St. Louis Blues. Look at Calgary with Daryl Sutter. Daryl Sutter was their coach, you know, in the early 2000s. So this idea that other teams don't bring back, you know, old coaches or former players as assistant coaches, Drew, like Montreal, Kirk Muller, he used to play for that. Like, I could go on and on. Sedin's in management in Vancouver, like, This is hockey. You know, players tend to stay with organizations, right?
No question.
Chris Pronger. I mean, like, you know, when he was in management, he's now not, you know, with the Panthers, but same type of, you know, idea with the Philadelphia Flyers. Remember, guys, when he was working with the Flyers, right? Sure. Danny Briere. Like, I could literally probably add another 20 names if you want me to, Drew. So this idea that, you know, former players coming back or former head coaches of the Moose coming back to be the assistant coach with the Jets, I think it's overblown a little bit. I'll say this though, Drew. If the Jets were to go with all former, you know, True North ties, then I would have a bit of an issue. And that's kind of why I brought up L.A. and Vigneault. Because Vigneault and O'Neill have coached together, and there's the Manitoba Moose connection, that's kind of where my head went. Like, does that mean that, you know, Vigneault is kind of the second choice of the Jets after Barry Trotz? We have no idea. It could be somebody completely different. But I do think that, you know, within this coaching staff, you probably would like to see at least one coach who doesn't have any previous ties with True North. I'll say that much.
To your point there, as you remember, when Paul Maurice and the organization, you know, I don't know exactly who was involved, if it was a Kevin Cheveldayoff decision or if it was a Paul Maurice decision, it was probably a combination thereof. When they hired Pascal Vincent as an assistant coach, he came from the QMJHL. Nobody really knew anything about Pascal Vincent. And even I remember, I think I was on the call when they got hired, and he said it's sort of, you know, the relationship and the offer came out of left field. There was no ties really between the organization or between Paul Maurice and Pascal Vincent. And so sometimes you hire familiarity and sometimes you don't. So it, you know, it's just an interesting sort of dichotomy for a Winnipeg Jets organization that has previously gone in a different direction, Dave, you know, with the Pascal Vincent example being, you know, particularly on point.
Sure. And now Pascal Vincent would be considered nuclear if you brought him in, because it'd be considered a move back to too much loyalty. So,
but I don't buy that, because I think Pascal Vincent was always the next head coach in waiting if he hadn't gone to Columbus last year.
No, I mean, I'm of course,
I know
I'm
you're being tongue in cheek.
But, but look, I mean, it's a fun topic to discuss. It creates some content for us. Trotz Watch ongoing for, well, hopefully not for very much longer. I agree with you. In the next half an hour, maybe hour and a half. No, not an hour and a half, but maybe next half an hour they want to give us. We'll bump Scotty Billick if we have to, or Marty Baron if we have to, just so we can get that fresh Jets.
We're not bumping those guys, Dave.
Well, maybe not Marty. We can bump Scott, but we won't bump Marty. But anyways, the point is, it's a lot of fun to discuss, and it's interesting to see where it's going to end up. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I had any sort of insight about the who's going to be the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets in, you know, a week, 2 weeks.
Nobody knows right now, Dave. That's the whole thing, guys. Like, we're, you know, what are we, 3 weeks into Trotz Watch, 4 weeks into Trotz Watch? And, you know, some of the NHL insiders, like Emily Kaplan's not necessarily an insider, but she's well-connected. They can't even really agree on what's currently happening with Trotz, right? Like, she's reporting, it looks like he's favoring Vegas. And then, you know, Friedman and Drager are saying, no, Trotz is taking his sweet time. And, you know, he's going to wait another week or two to make his decision, right? So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of conflicting reports similar to what's going on with Mark Scheifele.
Well, we'll talk about that later, of course. But I just want to say, yeah. Ezzy, it's funny because if you read what Friedman, which we transcribed and it's on illegalcurve.com, when you read, I think it was in his, what do they call it, CarCast with Jeff Merrick, his 32 Thoughts CarCast, or he called it a podcast.
Yeah, there's the 32 Thoughts CarCast and the 32 Thoughts written edition. It's hard to distinguish between the two.
That's right. But anyways, he basically said, he said he's not rushing to make a decision. Like if he decides, for example, if somebody does something this week that makes him say yes, this is the best for me and my family, and then let's go. That could happen, but nobody's necessarily expecting that to happen, which, again, kind of rounds counter to the idea that there's a deal. I mean, it doesn't, right? On one hand, it could say, well, a side deal, again, makes no sense. A deal is in place with Vegas. They've made a great offer. He's really strongly considering it. Maybe that's what she meant. But again, like I said, it doesn't seem, because I don't even think he would have had an opportunity to interview with Dallas at that point, which, if you think about it, why wouldn't he want to hear what their offer is? It doesn't make a lot of sense. So I agree, as there's a lot of conflicting reports, and it will be interesting to continue to watch. And we will have the latest on illegalcurve.com.
When we come back, our good friend Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun joins us for more Jets talk. We'll talk about the coaching staff. We'll talk about Arneal. We'll talk about Trotz. We'll talk about Scheifele apparently returning next season. We'll talk about all sorts of things. Stay with us. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg.
It just got a whole lot more handsome in here, boys.
I was going to say. Jeez. Mr. Scotty Billick, the one and only, joins us.
The bar is low for handsomeness, isn't it?
It is a little bit low. Hey, take the compliment.
Aside from pretty boy Manuk, yes.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Yeah.
But you should see Dave's routine that he has to go through with his skincare. I mean, I'm talking hours on end, cucumber masks.
Yeah, you know, lotions, potions, so much stuff.
He's got lotions, he's got oils. It's a real lengthy routine that none of us want to go through.
Yeah, fair enough. Too much work. Yeah, I'm good. I mean, I can't complain. It's Saturday. It's nice. It's sunny out for once. It's probably going to be over 20, and gas is still under $2 a liter. So, barely.
I saw your tweet last night. Oh, you filled up your vehicle. Are you sending us an invoice for this morning's appearance
in
order to offset some of the costs?
I should. I should.
I missed that, Scotty. Yeah. What happened? I usually see all of your tweets, but I didn't see that one. What was
it was like $123 to fill my tank, which, like, apparently for some was like a quarter of a tank for some guy who had like a Ford F-150 or something like that. He was like, yeah, that's just like a half of my tank or whatever. I'm like,
and that's crazy because Scott's got an electric car too. So $123 is really surprising.
I just sit there and pour gas out of the thing. I thought
that the Tesla, you just charged that up, Scott.
That's right. Yeah.
You're recreating the scene from Zoolander where they're fighting with the gas
station scene. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's funny. Scotty, obviously, not to talk about. There you go. Chagman.
There we go.
Says in the chat $194 to fill ridiculous. His truck.
Like, that's actually absurd. That is absurd. We're getting into, like, it's almost $200 to fill up a pickup truck. Like,
it's like a grocery bill.
Nuts.
Well, Ezzy's got kids, but like for me, like this, it's a grocery bill. I don't know what Ezzy pays to get groceries, but yeah.
Oh, crazy. Well, now that, you know, Ruben is really into, you know, chips, I'm like into the 300s at Costco.
Yeah, but how much? That's your bill. How much is it for the rest of the family?
Oh yeah, no, that's mainly me. No, but kids are very expensive.
Yeah,
you know that, Drew.
I do know that. Anyways, Scotty. Speaking of Scotties, Scott Arneal. Lots of talk that he's going to be joining the Winnipeg Jets coaching staff for this coming season, even regardless of who the new head coach is. You know, what are your thoughts on that? We spent the first sort of 30 minutes chatting about that. You know, is it an odd sequence of events? Is he a guy that True North, you know, needs to bring into the fold? What are your feelings about how that's all sort of appears to be playing out?
I mean, you know, usually the team often puts one guy behind the bench or that they want in these coaching things. So I assume they would have talked this over with a Barry Trotz, you know, in their meeting that they had a couple weeks ago now. I've been trying to find out if they've had a second meeting with Barry yet, but doesn't seem like that's happened just yet. So, but, you know, here's the thing. I mean, I think they have to, like every team in this whole Trotz watch, I don't even know what you want to call it, because it almost feels like he's just holding up the whole league. I mean, it's not his fault, you know. Like, I mean, there's a lot of teams that want his services, of course. And so everybody's waiting for the domino to drop. Who's going to get him? Is it Vegas? Is it Philly? You know, does Dallas squeak in there somehow and get it? Or does he go back to Nashville? Or is there another team? You know, what is Seattle doing? You know, are they sticking with Dave Hakstol? Or are they going to move on from him and try and, you know, rebuild that team after a, you know, probably a pretty disappointing year, even though they're an expansion team. You wonder what Seattle's going to do, you know, given the success Vegas had and that sort of thing. So, you know, I think, you know, teams are doing their due diligence in some other coaches. I'm not saying that Scott O'Neill is the next head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, because I don't think that's the case. But I do think they want him in the fold here. You know, to groom him potentially for something like that, or just to have him. I think they do feel very highly of Scott O'Neill. There's other coaches too that they feel highly of. But you know, Scott O'Neill's a guy that obviously known to the club, and probably somebody that they feel that can move up eventually one day. And I don't know how that, you know, when you hear that he's a lock, you know, I remember some people saying, well, it probably means that Barry Trotz isn't coming. I don't think that's necessarily the case. Part of this, as I said earlier, is, you know, sometimes the team does get to pick one of the guys behind the bench, and that's possibly him. We don't know what Barry or who Barry would bring if he is. I mean, obviously he's short one guy with Lane Lambert. So if he was to bring his old coaching staff with him, he's not going to be bringing Lane Lambert, because he's the new head coach of the New York Islanders, of course. So, yeah, I don't see it as anything but, you know, the Jets doing what they need to do right now while they wait on Barry to make a decision. So we'll see what happens. You know, the latest I checked in, there's been no decision made. I mean, that's as early as, or as late as yesterday afternoon. So it just seems that Barry's still weighing all of his options, and there's obviously a lot of them. And, you know, I don't know, maybe he was waiting for some guys after the second round to see what was going to happen. I don't think anybody in the third round right now, the Eastern or the Western finals, is getting cut if they lose their series. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think the Jets have to start looking and have been at other options, and just in case, right? I mean, you do need a plan B in the situation, because if you're not that team that's able to land Barry Trotz, and apparently the offer is pretty good from the Jets side. But it's not, you know, I had one coach or assistant coach earlier this week say, you know, it's not always just about the money. And then sometimes it is. Sometimes there's a big difference between coming to Winnipeg for $6 million and going to Vegas for $5 million, even going to Dallas for $5 million, places where there's no taxes, you know, state taxes. You're taking home a lot of money, a lot more money in your pocket. And it depends too. I mean, you know, if you take over the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, they're potentially a Stanley Cup contender. You know, obviously they didn't make the playoffs this year, but look at that roster. Look how many injuries they had. And you know, tell me that, you know, they wouldn't be there next year if that's it. So, you know, does Barry Trotz want that? Do you want more money, and do you want a team that is Stanley Cup, you know, potentially ready to get behind the bench and of that kind of organization? So, you know, I think Barry Trotz, obviously he enjoys loyalty. I think we saw that when his time in Nashville, and I didn't think he obviously didn't think his time in New York was going to be coming to an end as quickly as it did. So, but yeah, in terms of Scott O'Neill, I think the Jets are just doing their due diligence. And trying to, you know, Yeah, prepare for plan B, whatever that is. Whoever the next head coach of the Jets is, if it's not Barry Trotz, I mean, you know, they got to figure it out. We got the draft in, you know, just over a month time. And I believe the Jets want a head coach installed before the draft starts there in Montreal.
Well, Scott, you make a lot of good points, you know, there. And, you know, I agree with you when you talk about, you know, why wouldn't Trotz be, you know, taking his time, you know, with Vegas and Dallas seemingly at the top of the list with the Jets, right? I'm not sure, you know, Detroit and Philadelphia doesn't seem like, you know, they're as high up on the list, but it certainly seems like Winnipeg and Vegas and then maybe Dallas you'd put in third place, right? But, you know, you talk about, you know, plan B and, you know, some of those other coaches from your reporting and people that you've talked to, like, do we know how many coaches, other potential coaches, Jets have interviewed? Like, have there been any aside for Barry Trotz? And the second kind of part of that question, Scotty, is like, we talked about this earlier, like, what are your kind of thoughts on the idea of bringing back someone who has ties to True North, whether that's, you know, Scott Arneil or Pascal Vincent? Because my point, and, you know, Drew was kind of taking the opposing position, which is not wrong, but, you know, that kind of idea that, you know, oh, you're just bringing guys back.
Positions are always right. They're always right. Well, never been wrong, always right.
You're arguing against the putts like me, right? But, you know,
you said it.
What are your kind of thoughts on that? Because kind of where my mind went, and I'll stop talking here and I'll let, you know, people listen to you. But my kind of whole point was, you know, does that mean that, you know, Alain Vigneault is the front runner because Vigneault and Arneil coached together, you know, with the Rangers? So overall, kind of what are your thoughts on, you know, bringing back guys with ties to True North, and how many coaches are you aware, potential head coaches, are you aware that the Jets may have interviewed already?
I'm not sure how many other guys they've interviewed yet. I know Kirk Muller was high on their list too. The thing with Kirk Muller is I believe they tried to get him 11 years ago when the Jets came back, and there was talk of, you know, Kirk Muller, you know, potentially being a part of this organization back then. But that was what is now the Moose. And so it would have been, I guess, the St. John's, is it Ice Dogs? I can't even remember Ice Caps is the one that, I can't even remember. It's been so long, but yeah, they wanted to get him in the organization back then. And you know, obviously that didn't, you know, come to fruition. And 11 years later, you know, Kirk Muller is now potentially NHL ready, to be a head coach in the league. So I'm interested to see, you know, where it goes from there. I haven't heard of any interviews with Alain Vigneault. Obviously he's well known to the organization, having coached the Moose for a season, and, you know, just, it's interesting. I don't know. Like, and I you know, I kind of said to you, like, you almost need somebody with a fresh look at this franchise to come in and be the head coach. And that's where I'm at with it. You know, that's my own opinion. I think that, you know, you bring in Pascal Vincent, well, he knows everybody and everybody knows him. How much command does he have in that room? Or will he have in that room? We've heard of the issues in that room. We've heard of, you know, potentially rifts between players and head coaches or who runs the room and all that stuff. You know, Alain Vigneault strikes me as a guy at least who isn't going to deal with all of that. He has a reputation of being a bit of a hard ass head coach, and, you know, doesn't take a lot of crap from his players. So, you know, that's something that makes a little more sense if you're trying to fix or at least get everybody pulling in the same direction in your team. You know, I'm interested in a guy like Kirk Muller. You know, the reason we talk about this, we see what, you know, Martin St. Louis is doing, see what Jay Woodcroft is doing, like some of these, you know, quote unquote, younger coaches, former players, that sort of thing, where you're interested, you know, why are these guys a little bit more able, it seems sometimes, to, you know, whisper to the players a bit more. I'm a bit curious now. We saw with Andrew Burnett this year in Florida. You know, I think some of the talk of whether or not you're going to bring Andrew Burnett back is, you know, a bit crazy to me. Why wouldn't you bring the guy back that got them, you know, got Florida to where they were, President's Trophy winners this year? You know, that's obviously they went out in the second round, got swept by Tampa, but you know, that to me, that's still a sign of a team that's on the upswing and just a team that ran into a very experienced Tampa team that kind of knew how to win that series. And so I'm interested in that. I'm interested in, you know, how the Jets kind of manage this, because I think there is a worry that you get a bit of more of the same if you hire somebody that's known to the club, you know, like a Pascal or, you know, somebody like that. I know Todd Woodcroft's name has been thrown around. I don't believe that he's moving into a head coaching position in the NHL. I don't think the Jets have actually even contacted him about an assistant role either yet. So I know, but that would be another guy that they'd be kind of bringing back. And I'm just not sure that's the direction that the team actually wants to go, which is why they've been pretty hard on Barry Trotz. That's what, you know, that's who they want. And so, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know exactly who, you know, this team is very tight-lipped about who they what they're doing, what their business is. I do know that Kirk Muller was on the list, but they had to wait until Calgary, you know, whatever is going on with Calgary. Obviously, Calgary's out now. I'm not sure if an interview has taken place yet, but I know he was high up on the list too as a potential plan B option. So we'll see where that kind of goes. Again, I think a lot of this is where, you know, being held hostage is probably not the right terminology, but that's sort of where we're at right now. We're waiting game, right? It's Trotz watch, and there's more than one team doing this. I mean, you know, all these teams that need head coaches, right? No, none of these teams are talking about their plan Bs yet either. You know, obviously Philly had interviewed a couple other guys. I know Rick Tocchet was one of them, and I believe they Tortorella. Well, Tortorella is not really an option in Winnipeg with Pierre-Luc Dubois here, obviously. So if you want John Tortorella, you're gonna have to find out that you're going to be walking Pierre-Luc Dubois right to free agency, unrestricted free agency. So that's one of those things where, you know, the Jets kind of have their hands tied in terms of one coach that's out there who might fit this team well. You know, a John Tortorella could be a good fit in terms of, you know, getting everybody in the right direction, not taking a lot of crap from the players and just not letting that kind of take hold. But that's just not an option in Winnipeg. So, but yeah, I think Kirk Muller's high on that list. And, you know, I think Alan Vigneault is probably an option. I don't know. I mean, and I'm interested in Claude Julien as well. You know, Claude Julien's getting up a little bit up there in age, of course, but he coached Pierre-Luc Dubois and Adam Lowry at the World Junior, not the World Juniors, World Championships. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see with that. You know, Claude Julien's won the Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins. You know, bit of an old, kind of the old guard, I suppose. But again,
he can coach though, and he wins, right? Like that's what.
I don't know why
everyone's so negative on the old guard. Like, you know, look at what he almost won a gold medal with Team Canada, right? Like the guy wins.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think there's just, a lot of recycling that happens in the NHL, right? I mean, you know, what
I haven't taken my recycling out yet, Scotty. I wait till Monday.
I just wonder what they're going to, you know, what new stuff is Claude Julien bringing to the table, right? And that's where I'm interested, you know, but the same could be said about Barry Trotz, right? I mean, some of the downside of Barry Trotz is that system that he wants his players to play, right? And that's a hard system to play. I mean, obviously he got there with the Washington Capitals. But, you know, there was a, you know, reported rift between him and Matt Barzal in New York. And, you know, it's a different system. It's a very, it's a very defensive. Yeah. Like it's a very defensive minded system. Like, you know, can you think of Mark Scheifele wanting to play in that system? Like there's a lot of neutering that happens in that sort of system, right? The offense, isn't, you know, the number one thing. And you know, this is a team full of offensive player, at least, you know, the top six of this team, very offensive minded, right? I think there's obviously room to bring in a defensive, you know, structure to this team. Of course, this team needs it. But you're asking under Barry Trotz to do a lot. Now, you know, has Barry Trotz also learned, adapted over time to do that? But, yeah, I don't know. It's just it always seems like a tightrope. Like even if it is Barry Trotz, is it Barry Trotz who is he the guy? But yeah, I think he is because I think that's what they need, right? You know, whatever the money is. I had somebody say to me the other day, like it should be a blank check for him. And we've said this before. People on your show have probably said it before. You guys have probably said it before, but. You know, it's money under that has is not under a salary cap. that would go in and fix, you know, two of your probably your biggest problems, which are your defensive structure and, you know, I suppose your culture, whatever that means, your accountability, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think if it's not him, I think Kirk Muller's up there. And then I'm not sure from there, because it's kind of a, you know, throw something at the wall and see what sticks, because I think there's a lot of options out there. But, you know, I think losing Barry Trotz, if you don't get him, you kind of have to go back, not necessarily to the drawing board, but just kind of, you know, reassess, okay, you know, this didn't happen. You know, what then do we get? What are we looking for now? Because Barry Trotz was going to fix these problems for us. Who can come in and fix those problems as well? And that's the biggest question right now.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you as always. Our guest is Scott Bilk. He covers the Winnipeg Jets, of course, for the Winnipeg Sun.
You know, Scott, over in Buffalo this week, the draft combine is taking place and GMs are gathering and conversations are happening. And one of the guys having those conversations, of course, was Kevin Cheveldayoff, and he was asked by Mike Zeisberger, who's a good friend of ours on this show, yeah. And he was asked about Mark Scheifele and whether he saw Mark Scheifele as, you know, being traded or whatever. And, of course, Kevin Cheveldayoff answered as only Kevin Cheveldayoff would. But the amazing thing to me, and I guess maybe it's because we're in this market and we, like, pay attention a little bit more than folks outside of it, yeah. I couldn't believe how many headlines were like, Mark Scheifele is no longer being traded. Mark Scheifele is no longer, you know, on the block. You know, Scheifele remove. There was one that headline said, no longer likely to be traded this year. So what was your thoughts? Did this move the needle? Have you heard anything that's changed your perception that there may be a move of 55 this summer?
No, I mean, what was Kevin Cheveldayoff going to say? Yeah, exactly. Say, oh, yeah, we are going to trade him. Like, you know, of course he's going to say we're keeping him. Right. Because that's what they want to do. And eventually, you know, they don't want to lose Mark Scheifele. I mean, let's not, you know, kind of sugarcoat this or whatever. It's not like they want to get rid of Mark Scheifele. Here's a player that is a point per game guy that can score 40 goals for you on a season where he doesn't get injured. I mean, this year was an off season for Mark Scheifele. He had 30 goals. I mean, what do you? It seems crazy to me that people. Yeah, would think that, you know, this is a team that just kind of wants to get rid of him. But at the same time, if it's not fitting here, if it's not working, you have to look at that. And so I'm curious. I mean, I'm very interested to see what's going to happen. You know, we saw Carolina, and I was very intrigued when Brad Brindamore came out this past week after getting bounced from the playoffs and saying, essentially, you know, they need a goal scorer. They need a guy that can put the puck in the net in a playoff situation. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, here's the perfect marriage for a trade.
Isn't that guy Andrei Svechnikov, Scotty?
Well, it should be, but I mean, you know, it obviously wasn't. And, you know, here's the thing with Mark. I mean, Mark, you know, would, this is theoretical, but I was thinking, like, you know, who would be the best trade partner for the Jets right now if it was Mark Scheifele? And I'm wondering if it is Carolina, and you kind of go into Carolina and try and pillage them for some defensive help or, you know, maybe a Martin Nekash or somebody like that. I don't know who you could get. Like, that's the thing with Mark Scheifele. If you do trade him, like, what is the return? What are teams willing to give up for 2 years of a point-per-game guy at a really good contract, that sort of thing? But you know, to answer your question, you know, I didn't think anything changed when Kevin Cheveldayoff spoke and said we did to Zeiss. No, there's nothing against Zeisberger. Great guy. I love him. It's just, you know, what else was Kevin Cheveldayoff going to say when asked that question? And we all know, all four of us here know how Kevin Cheveldayoff talks. He never tells, you know, anything, us anything, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way he is. And you know, you just tend not to believe GMs, because they're only telling you what, you know, they're often telling you what, you know, is completely opposite of what, you know, they're
what you want to hear, right, Scotty?
I mean, the truth,
what
they want
to say, not what you want to hear.
It's, yeah, it's
what they say is what you hear.
Well,
what that means.
Yes, technically that has happened.
Who's on first, Ginsberg?
I mean, we're always having conversations on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're going to continue to have conversations, and sometimes those conversations lead to other conversations.
And I know Chegaman here is saying, so is Chevy lying? And it's like, I just don't think he's telling us the entire truth. You know, is it completely... true that they're not going to trade Mark Scheifele and they've mended the fences so far? Sure. But, you know, we recall what Mark Scheifele said at the end of the year. And I believe, you know, he wants to know who the next head coach of this team is, too, before he's like, yeah, I'm cool with, you know, staying here. Or do I want to demand a trade with Gretzky? We were told many times that Evander Kane never demanded a trade request. And what was the first thing we heard when Evander Kane was traded? How many times he demanded a trade request, right? I mean, say what you want about Evander Kane, but this is my point, is that GMs will say, oh, no, nothing's, you know, everything's fine. Everything's, you know, hunky-dory around here. And that's not always the case, or that's not what's true about what they're doing with their players. You know, is Mark Scheifele still on the trading block? Or an option for a trade? I think absolutely he is. And I think
sorry, Scotty, I was just gonna cut you off. I was gonna quickly say the big difference. I mean, to me, Scheifele is similar a lot to Andrew Kopp in the sense that, you know, you're talking about a guy who's gonna be a UFA in 2 years, right? So it's very different than Evander Kane. It's very different than Patrick Laine or even right. Jacob Trouba, right? Because those guys were younger. So I think that's the difference here is. And that's the question really that needs to be asked, right? Like, it's not, you know, whether or not Scheifele is going to be traded. I mean, it obviously is, but it's, you know, is he going to be here 2 years from now? That is the big, because we know that, like, you're going to have to sign Scheifele to a 5-6 year deal. He's not going to sign his contract. He's looking for a big payday after his current contract is over, right?
But I would ask this question.
If they don't trade Scheifele, and if you bring back much of the same team as last year, and we know all the upheaval that was in that room last year, are you that confident that a new head coach is going to solve all the problems? Because it seems to me that would be putting a lot of pressure and a lot of unrealistic expectations on that new head coach. I mean, the question I guess is the room, my phrase, you know, is the room broken and not fixable? Because the way it ended last year, it certainly sounded like it was broken.
For sure. Yeah. No. And I think this all comes down to who they get as a head coach, right? I mean, and who do you think? I mean, you know, does Mark Scheifele or whoever it is, whoever on the team that might be disgruntled, want to work with the Barry Trotz? Do they want to play in that style of system? Or, you know, I think Mark Scheifele would welcome that if I'm totally honest. And I know this is like completely against how we see Mark Scheifele play sometimes on the ice, the disinterested, disengaged Mark Scheifele that we've seen. But, you know, I think it, you know, Mark Scheifele wants to be in the a playoff player. I think Mark Scheifele has shown that he can be dominant in the playoffs. And I think Barry Trotz would, or somebody like that, would be able to find room and figure it out. But, you know, this whole idea that the players are running the room and all that kind of stuff needs to go away with whatever the new coach is. So that's probably that's the biggest thing for me. But yeah, I mean, I think it depends what you want to do with this team in the summer. One of the things, and Mark Scheifele said it himself, or at least he said he didn't know, was what this team's identity is. And, you know, I think we do talk to this about with Kevin Cheveldayoff at the end of the year, and you know, he didn't really have an answer to like what he wants his team to really look like. And, you know, that's, I think, the biggest challenge for this Jets team this summer, whether a coach brings that kind of, you know, whatever that identity is in or not. The Jets have to figure out what they want to be. You know, we're watching these playoff teams, right? You're watching the Colorados, you're watching the New York Rangers, you're watching teams like that who have gotten far and have been playing well. You know, they have clear identities and what they want to be, and got players that they needed into their system, into their roster to bring that sort of identity to the team, to strengthen what that identity was. And you know, the Jets just didn't really have one. So you know, that's what the Jets need to do. They need to figure out who they want to be and then start molding the team around that sort of identity. And that means players and who's in the roster and that sort of thing. Because, and I agree, you're right. I mean, I think if they come back with the same roster and you know, not the head coach they wanted, I'm not sure what changes. And Mark Scheifele is a good... I think there's... room there for the Jets to get better by trading Mark Scheifele. And, you know, it sounds odd that, you know, you might be saying that about a point per game guy, but I do think that, you know, you can get better. And if you can make a trade with a Carolina or something like that, you're bringing in players that know how to play a certain way, know how to play a defensive way and that sort of thing. But again, this all ties into a head coach, and you need a head coach that's going to demand that from the players night in and night out, and a guy that's actually going to be able to speak to them. And so I think that's what we're waiting to see. You know, the draft, again, I think the draft is a big deal because that's when you would want to trade a guy like Mark Scheifele, depending what you think you're going to get back for him. But if you think your picks are part of it, or you're going to get back, you know, you're going to get into the first round with another pick or whatever it's going to be from a team, you know, I think that's probably the deadline, you know, at least internally, to trade a guy like Mark Scheifele if you're going to do it. But, you know, I think that, you know, again, Kevin Shoveldev wants to keep Mark Scheifele. He's his first draft pick of this organization. He's kind of a model of the whole draft and develop philosophy and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I mean, you know, eventually, you know, Kevin Shoveldev needs to do what's right by the team and try and make the team better in the end. So, yeah, it's a weird one. It's, you know, and I agree with Chegman, you know, the players do always run the room, but you need the right players running the room. And that's been part of the issue over the last few years is that, you know, there just hasn't been the right players. The right players, I mean, when you hear guys talking about accountability, I mean, that's a big deal. When you see your guys saying not potentially respecting the guy next to you, that's a big deal. Those are major red flags. And I don't, as much as the organization didn't want to hear that at the end of the year, I think it was a very good thing for this team that the players came out and just said it anyways. Because, you know, I think everybody here needed a bit of a kick in the rear end to try and get moving again, because it's been a few wasted kind of seasons where we've talked about this kind of, you know, just everybody kind of playing for themselves sort of thing. And you watch any of these playoff teams, you know, none of them are playing for themselves. They're playing for the guy next to them. And there's something really, really important and tangible about that way when everybody's pulling in the right direction instead of, you know, kind of pulling, you know, all around the compass, so to speak.
Once the moves start, they will be fascinating. Scott Billick will have them all covered for the Winnipeg Sun. Scotty, we'll let you get on with your Saturday. I assume you're going to go siphon some gas from a neighbor's truck or something. Whatever it's going to be, I hope you make it a great weekend, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate it. I've been looking for a gas dealer, so if there's anybody in the chat that wants to reach out, yeah, I'll buy gas.
Just make sure that you take your mustard, Scotty.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's got to give you the energy for the siphoning, that sort of thing.
No cramping. No cramping while I'm in siphoning position.
Thanks. Scotty, be well, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Yeah.
Cheers, Scott.
Yeah. Scott Billick's appearance on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Betway, one of the most trusted voices in sports betting, both in Canada and all around the world. Betway is the sports betting app that puts you, the customer, at the forefront. With a large selection of betting options and sports, as well as strong promotions and fair odds, what are you waiting for? Head on over to Betway and bet your way. Must be 19 years or older to play. Please play responsibly. When we come back, more Jets talk. Marty Biron at the bottom of the hour. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is up next. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick cut rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly. See LindenMarketDental.com.
So you're a pizza person. You married a wing person. But somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Saturday morning, we're back here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you as he's on site at our friends at Bernstein's Deli. Are you eating during the show? Are you planning to eat before the show? Are you eating after the show? Are you eating at all three stages? So to give us an update.
Three stages.
All three stages. You're having three breakfasts.
I ate before I got here. I've been eating during the show, and I will be eating after the show.
Excellent.
So, no, I'm not eating during the show. I got to stay focused. I've got a cup of coffee here, but I'm going to probably eat a little bit after.
There's definitely
going to get an icy sandwich.
There's definitely been numerous instances, and Dave, you can back me up on this. Maybe less so on this format because people can see you, but there were definitely instances where we would come back from break when we were on the old departed radio station, and just as we're starting the segment, you would take a big bite
out
of some sort of food, and you would be going through the segment while people are listening to you.
Yeah, well, there was that one time where I ate that half chicken during one of those shows, and that was took me a little while to you know get back to the business here. And but no, I'm gonna wait until afterwards. There's so much good stuff there. If you're in the neighborhood, pop on down, say hi. The coffee is hot, and there's a lot of good food smelling really good. So
he's getting down. Hungry, is what he's saying. Go ahead.
They're getting very hungry.
There are already also numerous takes of Ezzy eating cake. He would buy cake for us and then eat the cake on air. So lots of examples of that as well of throughout the years. And hey,
guys, Dave, you don't inherit a body that's 245 pounds. Okay. You have to build that up.
That's true, Big Daddy. So I will say though, I mean, I did see the ratings, 1290. Well done.
Funny 1290. Yeah, I saw the ratings also. The only thing funny about Funny 1290 were their ratings. Because I didn't know numbers could go that low. But there's no need to engage in shots.
Ain't nothing funny about those numbers.
That's right.
What, did they have like a negative rating or what?
I think it was they're actually, they were paying people to listen, and those people still weren't listening, is I think what the ratings said. But those, look, we're doing great, and hopefully one day,
no offense to that, but I mean, this is the best we've ever done. Is the best thing ever happened to us was the death of that place.
It's amen.
So I'm not complaining.
Amen. Exactly right. Okay, let's talk about the Mark Scheifele comments that Mike Zeisberger had with Kevin Cheveldayoff, and Scotty addressed them and said, what do you expect Chevy to say? But I want to sort of tie it back to last week's interview with Eric Comrie that we conducted. And if you haven't yet checked out that interview with Eric Comrie, I highly recommend you do so. It's on our YouTube page. It's on our YouTube channel. Dave actually took the interview and cut it out so you can focus strictly on that. And the comments that Eric Comrie made sort of vis-a-vis the dressing room for the Winnipeg Jets and the conflict that so many people think existed
Comrie sort of poured some cold water on that idea. Now, I believe Eric Comrie is probably going to give the stock answer there. I mean, when you're the backup goalie on any team, your job is to play 15, 20 games a year and then basically otherwise don't make any waves whatsoever. That's your job. If you're a backup goaltender and you're getting, you know, and you're getting attention for saying things in the media, it's probably not the role that the team wants you to play. That said, I'll take Eric Comrie at face value. And, you know, the comments he made said that it was way overblown, this idea that the dressing room was this disaster area. My words, not his. Like usual in life, the truth is probably somewhere in between. But it was very interesting comments that I thought probably worth revisiting today after they happened last week at the end of the show.
Well, yeah, and the funniest part was Scheifele was in Comrie's basement in California, right? Like, we didn't even know that at the time, right, when we organized the interview with Scott Brown, right? Like, we didn't know. We just assumed, you know, Comrie's at his house. And he mentioned while we were talking to him last Saturday that Scheifele was visiting him and they were golfing in California, right? So that was pretty funny. But, I mean, I think, guys, I mean, you would agree, and I think a lot of people watching and listening would agree that in sports, and obviously, you know, we're talking hockey here, NHL hockey, AHL hockey, I mean, every dressing room is going to have, you know, some type of issues. There's no, like, perfect kumbaya, everybody gets along. I mean, obviously, you know, the Moose Dave will test us. This.
We're the kumbaya where everybody gets along.
Absolutely, right? Well, we've been in this for 13 and a half years, boys, so obviously, you know, we can, you know, embrace our love for each other, right? But no, I mean, so look, I think, you know, there were obviously some issues in that dressing room. Has it been overblown by the media, including maybe us? Yeah, that's a possibility. Like, I don't think, guys, that, you know, this year in the dressing room you had guys, like, you know, dropping the gloves and you know, yelling and swearing at each other on a nightly basis. Clearly there were some, you know, clash of personalities, but I also think that you would have that on many teams across the NHL. So yeah, it wasn't surprising to me. Obviously Comrie is a very well-liked guy and he's a team guy. So it also doesn't suit Comrie's personality, you know, to necessarily, you know, throw a player or two players under the bus. Right. But the reality is we don't know. And Dave mentioned this last week, especially considering that, you know, we haven't been in the dressing room in what, 2.5 years now, 3 years, right? Like, mm-hmm. Dave used to be in the dressing room after every game. So not only, you know, would you be able to talk to these guys in the scrum, but you would just be able to talk to guys, you know, off the mic, right? And see how guys interact and just get a better feel of the dressing room. So I think that has to be mentioned again here. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of hearsay, a lot of, oh, this guy doesn't get along with this guy, or this guy doesn't get along with this guy. I mean, you know, clearly at the top of this list is the leadership group, right? And, you know, you wonder, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois as a new guy who obviously has been kind of tagged as maybe a future leader, whether that's a C or an A, because I think, you know, if you ask a lot of people, Josh Morrissey would be a good candidate to get that C on his chest, just the way he leads by example, right, Dave? So, yeah, I mean, you know, you tied it in with Comrie's comments and you know, Mike Zeisberger. I agree with Scotty Billick. I mean, what is Chevy going to say at the draft combine? He's not going to say, oh, yeah, we're going to trade Scheifele, you know, a week before the draft or at the draft. So I think right now I would probably put it at 50-50, just because Scheifele becomes a UFA in 2 years. That's why I think there's always the possibility of a trade. I think there's a good chance that Scheifele's not going to sign here long-term, especially if Dubois signs long-term. I just think you have to add it up here, guys. Like, Scheifele, I think, has the potential to make more money elsewhere.
Let me ask this question to Dave. If it turns out that, you know, next season starts and the problems, you know, continue, or the problems aren't solved, you know,
just to clarify, sorry, problems being not winning?
Problems being not winning, problems being not playing the right way, problems being that not everybody's pulling in the same direction. Sort of some of the comments, the accountability issues that we heard at the end of the year. If those continue into the start of next year, aren't you now sort of, you know, by being, you know, by not being maybe proactive in making the trade this offseason, aren't you now really behind an eight ball for trying to solve the problems? Because you're already, you know, in the middle of a season, there's probably fewer suitors. There's probably fewer places that are necessarily lining up to acquire a player if you have to change things around. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like you know, kicking the can down the road, while it could be beneficial, it also has a greater degree of risk attached to it.
And that, Drew, is why you probably want to have a head coach in the next week or two in advance of the draft, because as we've seen, you know, for years when we went to five straight drafts starting in 2013.
We had a good run there, Dave.
We did have a good run. That maybe wasn't
Florida, Buffalo, New Jersey, York, Philly.
Yeah, we had some good times, saw some good baseball games. Had some good food, but
yeah, I got hit with the ball at one of those baseball games.
Philly, yeah, I was in Philly. 2014. That was a great
Chase Utley.
Chase Utley.
How about that for a memory? Chase for a guy that's killed this many brain cells, Drew. That's not bad.
Ezzie, you weren't there, Ginsburg.
You and Hustler were drinking at the what was that place called?
Affinity.
Xfinity.
Affinity pool. I don't know.
The game went into the bottom of the game went 17 innings. They shut the beverage service at the ballpark. You and Huss left.
Huss and I needed some drinks. We needed to keep the party going.
Yeah. Dave Rich and I stayed at the baseball game only to have it end on a walk-off home run by Chase Utley.
Sorry, Drew. Who's Rich?
Yeah, the other guy. We don't know who he is. The ball ricocheted off the seat behind us, came back and pegged me in the mouth.
Well, if you recall correctly, I was standing behind you, and I was that ball, like Chase Utley hit it 10,000 miles in the air, and I looked up, and I was like, I don't have a glove. This is going to break my hand. I'm like, I want a home run ball. It'd be pretty sick, but like, I'm not breaking my hand for it. And I was like, yoink, I'm going to stand over there. Let Drew take it off the face, then get the rebound. And the best part was the picture I took after of Drew with the guy who actually got the ball and made the funniest face. Anyways, getting back to the hockey talk.
You can share the photo. It's been a while. Yeah, I'm sure you can put it somewhere.
I'll find it on my phone. I'll put it up.
Okay.
But anyways, the point I'm making
is it's on Dave's flip phone.
It is. I think what it ultimately comes down to is why you would want to have a head coach in place in advance of the draft. And because that head coach is going to have a conversation with Mark Scheifele. He's going to have a conversation with Blake Wheeler. He's going to have a conversation with the whole entirety of this, you know, Adam Lowry, Josh Morrissey, Pierre-Luc Dubois. He's going to get the measure of this group, and they're going to be able to take that information, and he's going to say, this is the kind of game I'm going to play. Are you going to be a part of it? Do you want to be a part of it? Do you think you can? And if the answer, again, that will be an answer between the two of them, is, you know, yeah, like, well, like I said, they'll evaluate. I'm sure Kevin Cheveldayoff will follow that up with phone calls, and then you're going to make decisions. And yeah, there's no time like the NHL draft when everybody is together, when things start to happen. That's when you see the moves really, you know, we'll never forget in 2013 when we were sitting there in New Jersey and Gary Bettman went on the mic. He goes, and they're booing him like they always do. And he goes, you're going to want to hear this one. When the Canucks and the Devils made the big Corey Schneider trade.
Gary Bettman impression, it fulfills my day.
There you go. So,
it didn't work out too well for my Devils, by the way.
No. But I mean, it was a big trade and it was a big moment. And so we'll see if there is something there to be had. But again, the big equalizer is, and Trini KP has been saying this in the chat, and I agree, is winning. I mean, look, this Moose team, and I don't want to make it about the Moose right now, but they were as close a group as I've seen, happy for each other's success, which you have generally with younger players. But more importantly, every single guy told me about how much fun it was to come to the rink every day. That's because they won. And winning changes your mentality, changes your focus. All these guys are super competitive. Every single guy in that room is wired to win. And when you don't win, you're not having fun. Like, I don't care if you're in the NHL and you're making millions of dollars. Obviously, that's a pretty good plus. Some guys are satisfied with that. But a lot of guys are wired to be winners. And again, if they're not winning, I'm not saying it's they're not part of the reason that they're not winning. Of course, they could be. But I just think that if you have a group that is, as Drew talked about, pulling in the same direction and they're winning, I think a lot of this shit goes away, to be honest with you.
Winning.
And I think a lot of it goes away and we don't hear about this kind of stuff, because the reality is it's easy when everybody's pissed off and you're losing and you're not making the playoffs. When everybody predicted, half the media predicted this team would win the Stanley Cup, and yet you don't even make the playoffs. I think that changes focus. I think it makes, especially with COVID and everything that happened there, I think everybody was just miserable. And I suspect that there is still an opportunity for this team. Again, Drew, you're right. There is a risk. There's no question about it. But there's also an opportunity. If you make some slight tweaks, bring in some new players, and again, like I said, have a head coach like Barry Trotz who can install a system, maybe that changes everything with a goaltender like Connor Hellebuck.
Well,
By the way, boys, when I said winning there, the table beside me like turned around. They're like, why is that guy talking to himself?
Well, Ezra, they definitely think as you're sitting there by yourself talking into a microphone that you've completely lost your mind. I mean, anybody who's at Bernstein's Deli right now is wondering why this guy is standing there with a microphone, with a computer, wearing headphones. And not eating anything, I think, just drinking coffee quietly by himself and then occasionally talking into this mic. There's no question that people are elbowing each other and they're not elbowing each other and saying, hey, there's Ezra of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. They're like, hey, what's wrong with that guy?
No, I've been trying to be known right here, but nobody knows who I am. No.
Nobody knows who you are. That's okay. That's better. You're better off that way, Mr. Ginsburg.
Thinking about maybe getting a cinnamon bun.
Well, that's you need a fourth meal in between. That makes a lot of sense. I think you should have a cinnamon bun, before Marty Biron joins us at the bottom of the hour. I think that'd be a great suggestion. You know, look, it comes down to, you know, Dave's point is valid that look, if you're winning, doesn't matter if you're having a personality clash. There's countless number of stories of teams that have won that don't get along. You don't have to be kumbaya in the dressing room. You can dislike each other. You can dislike teammates. You can dislike a group of teammates. You can be a team that's got, you know, 20 players and 20 different limousines, as the old adage goes. But if you're winning, it solves everything. The problem is, though, you know, why were they losing last year? Were they losing last year because they don't like each other? Or was the not liking each other a byproduct of the losing? And that's what they need to solve and discover this offseason. And I've said this since, you know, before the season ended. I don't know that True North, I don't know that the organization has it in them to do a real raw evaluation of what they have. You know, I don't know that they have the intestinal fortitude to trade a guy like Scheifele, who is the face of the franchise, or that they have the intestinal fortitude to take the captaincy away from Blake Wheeler. Those would be the tough decisions I've talked about for months on end now, that I see no sign that those tough decisions are being made, or those tough conversations are actually occurring.
Well, we don't know.
And that's my concern. That would be the concern I would have as a Jets fan.
Well, we don't know that, though, Drew. I mean, for you to say that you don't think that they have the intestinal fortitude, I mean, that's just an opinion, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely, it's an opinion.
And you're talking about, you know, a couple things. Like the Wheeler leadership thing is completely different than Scheifele's situation, because Scheifele's situation, like we talked about it, you know, we've talked about it the last 3 weeks now. If you trade Mark Scheifele, you either have to bring in a top six center or you have to bring in a top pairing defenseman. Nothing else, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe, you know, a winger, but it just makes no sense for me why you would trade, you know, your top center for a winger. So that's not an easy trade to make, right? Like the team that is, you know, it's like the old money in, money out type of thing. Scheifele's contract is very appealing, right? But whatever team is acquiring him, you know, they have to be in a position, you know, salary cap wise and just overall where their team is at to acquire him, right? So I think you guys would agree that, you know, trading Scheifele is not going to be super easy. Like that's something that you have to work on for a while. It's possible, you know, Chevy has talked to teams and something is, you know, let's say, quote unquote, serious. But we don't exactly know how close or you know, how many, you know, players have disagreed or have issues with each other. I agree, Drew. Like if you have a bunch of players in the dressing room that aren't, you know, getting along and aren't playing for each other, it's tough to win. I mean, there's so much talent in that room. And again, this is all conjecture. Everybody has their opinion on, you know, how many players don't get along with these guys. And I think it's kind of dangerous, Dave, if you ask me to kind of, let's say, quantify that. You know, Eric Comrie said it was the closest group, you know, that he's ever been a part of. So how much stock do you want to put in that? I mean, that's completely, you know, I think Jets fans would probably, you know, differ on how much stock they put into Eric Comrie's comments. But I think there's no doubt that when you're losing, you're going to have players that are unhappy, not only with the results, but with each other, right? So that's what I would say. But I think that, you know, there's no doubt that there are players on this team that are close. Losing a guy like Andrew Kopp, I think, is huge. He's been with the Jets since day one. So that's why I've said to you guys kind of off air, I think, you know, you want to look at bringing in a veteran player you know, who has the ability to kind of galvanize this team a little bit, right? Like, think of like a guy like Jason Spezza in Toronto, right? Or if you want to go back to like when they brought in Matt Hendricks. All due respect to Matt Hendricks, though, he just didn't really have a role with this team. He was a healthy scratch, you know, last time he was, I believe, in the playoffs, right? If I'm not mistaken. So,
well, you remember they reacquired him for the St. Louis series. He went to Minnesota. He left as a free agent. Then they reacquired him for a seventh round pick at the trade deadline,
right?
Because he's such a great dressing room guy. Clearly, it you know, whatever they were trying to solve. I mean, look, if you went out and acquired Matt Hendricks a couple years ago now, this is how many years ago did they acquire Matt Hendricks, Dave?
I think 3 years ago for the second time.
Three playoff series ago, they knew that there was something amiss in that dressing room, and they haven't really done anything to solve it. I mean, they know there's a problem, yet they're only willing to sort of work around the edges to try and actually solve that problem, Dave. And that, to me, I just don't know that a head coach is necessarily going to come in and be the panacea for those, what I'm going to call, deep ingrained issues.
Well, I mean, that's fair, but I mean, we're not talking about just any guy who's, you know, not going to be able to command the room. And that's why Barry Trotz seems to be so critical for this Jets team, right? Because if you're getting Barry Trotz, you're not getting Barry Trotz. It's what you're signaling, right? Barry Trotz isn't coming in here to rebuild the Winnipeg Jets. You're not trading Mark Scheifele to acquire New Jersey's two first round picks and, you know, a prospect defenseman. You're bringing Barry Trotz in because you think your team can still win. You've got Connor Hellebuck still signed for a few more years. You've got Mark Scheifele on a very favorable contract for a few more years. Kyle Connor, a lot more years than Kyle Connor, but Josh Morrissey, Adam Lowry. Like, you've got your core locked up and you've got some complementary pieces coming up through the organization. So, you know, I do wonder how it would look with a Barry Trotz and an actual, I mean, again, it's so funny because everybody's talked about this Jets team, how they've won without playing a system. And now you're saying, well, what happens if you could actually maybe not have as much talent, you know, perhaps, and they don't have as much talent, you lose a guy like Andrew Kopp. That's a big blow to the organization, given what he was able to do. But perhaps what we actually see is a coach who's willing to make Nikolaj Ehlers the first line winger, you know, reduce Blake Wheeler's role to a, you know, a third line winger role and time on the power play where he can create, have that time and space, you know, someone who's willing to make some tough decisions. Cause I do still think there's talent with this roster. I mean, I agree with Ezzy, you know, you can't be giving away Mark Scheifele. If you lose Mark Scheifele, where's your center depth, right? You're playing Perfetti as a winger. You've got, you know, David Gustafson in the wings, but David Gustafson, even though he's a top line center with the Moose, you know, really comes in as your fourth line center in theory but again, and I've said this a lot, if you have Mark Scheifele as your first, Pierre-Luc Dubois as your second, or I don't really care, you can interchange them, it doesn't make a difference to me, Paul Stastny is your third, and Adam Lowry is your fourth, well, how crazy notion, that's center depth, and you've got good wingers that you can pair with these guys, you know, Stastny and Wheeler work well together. Could you imagine Ehlers and Scheifele and Perfetti and, you know, Dubois and Connor, and let's say you bring Svechnikov back. I mean, you have depth. You have stuff to work with. You have guys who can all create and probably play within a system that Barry Trotz would allow them to, I think, be a very effective team. So there's still a talent. That's why I'm saying, and you've got Connor Hellebuyck who, you know, even though he had a down year, still had a decent year. So there's a possibility, and you've got some good young DE prospects coming up through the system. I don't think this team is as far away as everyone else seems to think they are. I just think that they just need a coach who's going to instill in them a system, and guys have to buy in. And if they do that, I think this team could be a competitive team.
The answers continue to be very relevant. The questions need answers, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say there. And when we get those answers, we'll bring them all to you on the Illegal Curve.
Glad you clarified that, Drew, because I had no idea what you were saying.
And, of course, on illegalcurve.com. Most of the time, people don't know what I'm saying, but that's part of the charm of this show. When we return, Marty B. Ron is going to join us. Saturday morning, you're live on YouTube. You're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on all of our social media platform. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and we're pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend Marty B. Ron joins us on this show. You know Marty from his analysis, of course, with TSN, RDS, MSG, and of course his career as a NHL goaltender. Marty, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are things?
Good morning. Everything is great. I hope you guys are having a good morning as well.
We certainly are. It's always a good morning when you're able to join us, Marty. Appreciate your time as always. Obviously brought you on to talk about what's going around the NHL, around the league. Let's start in the Eastern Conference with the series between the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Rangers have a 2-0 series lead. From what you're watching Shesterkin outplay Vasilevsky, in my estimation right now. Obviously, if you have a different opinion, you can share that. You know, with the way Shesterkin is playing and a 2-0 lead, and I know you should never count out the Tampa Bay Lightning, but given the injury troubles that the Lightning are facing right now, is this their biggest adversity in your mind since they've become this juggernaut of a Stanley Cup champion?
Absolutely. I think, and I wasn't expecting it from the New York Rangers to home ice advantage. I mean, it means something, right? It meant something to Carolina, although they did not win in game 7 against the Rangers, but it does mean something when you can succeed or successfully like take advantage of it. And for the Rangers, it could have gone the other way. You lose one at home and now you're thinking, oh, okay, we're going to Tampa. You know, this is a team that knows how to win. They could have returned for game 5 in New York with a 3-1 deficit, but instead they took care of business. I really like the way the Rangers played in game 1. You knew there's a rest versus rust factor. I didn't know how big of a factor it is. So, for example, if you win in 5 and the other team wins in 7 and you have 5 days off and you go into the next series, I don't know that it is that much of a fact, right? Because it's not a week extended like length of time where you didn't play. But the last 8 times now that a team has swept a series was going to play a team that went to 7 games. The team that went to 7 games won game 1. So, and the Rangers were the 8th consecutive time this happened. I think you have to also watch the game to realize that Vasilevsky was not on top of his game. The Tampa Bay Lightning seemed to be running out of gas about the middle of the second period. They hung in there. Their execution wasn't that great, but they hung in there. And then so I thought in game 2 that Tampa was going to really, really like open it up and that Vasilevsky was going to be like, as we've seen in after a loss, he's been almost unbeatable. He was pretty good. But again, you saw some little things that, you know, rebounds that hit him right in the chest that are bouncing for Rangers to be able to get second and third opportunities. You saw missed coverage in the defensive zone by Tampa. I just don't think that they have their full game going yet. So the rest was probably not beneficial. I think it was more of a rust thing and they're missing Braden Point. So not that I want to take credit away from the Rangers. The Rangers have played great, but the Tampa Bay Lightning looked nothing like the team that beat Florida.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think Drew and Dave and a lot of people watching and listening do. And Marty, like, I'm so glad that we have you on this week. I was telling Dave and Drew, I'm like, we got to get Marty on. There's nobody better to talk about Igor Shesterkin than you, because you played for the Rangers, played with Henrik Lundqvist, and not only the Rangers, obviously other teams. You know what I've been dying to ask you, and it's pretty remarkable, really, what Shesterkin is doing in the playoffs. I mean, and that's saying a lot, right? Because he's almost a shoe-in to win the Vezina this year. You know, I don't know if he ends up winning the Hart Trophy, but I think you would agree that, you know, I think he should probably be given more votes than he'll probably end up getting for the Hart Trophy. Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews might have something to say about that. But yeah. I mean, look at his save percentage the last 4 games, including game 6 and 7 against Carolina, right? Like 949, 949, 949, 935. Like this is in the playoffs. So, I mean, I guess the question that I have for you is just how impressed have you been that Shesterkin has been able to continue his strong play from the regular season into the playoffs, just be absolutely dominant? And how much confidence do you think that is giving the Rangers? I mean, it seems like an obvious question, but it almost seems like, you know, the Rangers know, you know, that Shesterkin's not going to let in a lot of goals, and they seem to be the much more confident team. Obviously, home ice helps, but it just seems like Shesterkin is just, you know, he's really giving, you know, the Rangers just, they're, it's almost like they're bulletproof at this point.
Well, I mean, to answer this question, you also have to look at what the Tampa Bay Lightning and Vasilevskiy are doing. I think that the Lightning are realizing that Vasilevskiy is not 100% in his tool set right now, and they're not playing the same way. They're not as aggressive up the ice. Their defense are not joining the rush as much. So for me, when you look at Shesterkin, I said before the playoffs that, you know, they ask you for your MVP, like before the playoffs, who's going to win the Conn Smythe? And I'm like, okay, well, Nathan MacKinnon, obviously Colorado is the favorite to win. But if I have this wild horse that I think I could ride, it would be Igor Shesterkin. Even in the losing way, if the Rangers were to get to the finals and lose in seven, and Shesterkin's the reason why they got there, he could. And in the Pittsburgh series, it didn't look like that. He looked very, very fragile, especially in Pittsburgh, and they were down 3-1. Now, Shesterkin is a couple of things. Physically, he's a freak, right? He's like Vasilevskiy. His hips open up. His core strength is amazing. His flexibility is unbelievable. His lateral movements are so quick. So that's obviously a plus for Shesterkin to be able to do all of these things. Mentally, he's got that cocky, very confident type of attitude, you know, waving to Evgeny Malkin in the regular season out of MSG, like, get out of here. In game 7 against Carolina, after the handshake line, he went by the bench, the Rangers bench, and there was a couple of Hurricanes fans right there. One was wearing a Hartford Whalers jersey, and he tapped on the glass, almost like these guys must have been all over Shesterkin every time he went to the bench for a drink of water or a commercial break. And he just, like, gave it back to the fans. And I'm thinking, this is somebody that's ultra confident. And now he's going into what is deemed, and I know in Russia, it's really, really big right now, this matchup between Shesterkin and Vasilevskiy. I mean, they are two of their biggest, best stars right now playing in the NHL. And I think he wants to make a point. So yeah, he's not only the mental, the physical things, but the mental side of it for Shesterkin is something that stands out.
Saturday morning, we're live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Marty B. Ron is our guest, breaking down the Stanley Cup playoffs, talking about everything going on in and around the NHL.
Well, Marty, I'm not going to ask you about the Western Conference Finals because I want to go to the Battle of Alberta, because that to me was just fascinating. I mean, I don't know anybody who came in not expecting Jacob Markstrom to continue to play the way we've expected him to play all season long. Were you a little bit surprised at the kind of the downgrade from what you've expected from him? And more, and the second point I would ask is, do you think he can learn from this and build on it and be, you know, use, harness this in terms of being a better goaltender for the Calgary Flames next season and specifically in the playoffs?
I think he can learn. So I was never a huge Jacob Markstrom fan, but this year, look, you had to like what he's done, right? The shutouts, just the domination from the crease out that Calgary was putting out every game. Like, it was so consistent throughout the regular season that you had to think it was going to be the same thing in the playoffs. In the first round, the battle, Markstrom, Hottinger, like, it was really, really good. What I think happened, and that's just me on the outside, I really don't think Calgary handled the Oilers' speed well at all. And I think you saw Markstrom on his heels a lot. Even the winning goal, Connor McDavid's overtime goal in game 5, that is not a good goal to give up. It almost feels like Markstrom saw McDavid come through the slot and was like, I'm going to back up a little bit. Like, he could do a million different things. I think Markstrom was second-guessing himself a ton. We saw it from game 1 and in the game 2, how often he got beat on his post with the far side exposed, like really retreating to what would be a comfort zone at times, maybe for Jacob Markstrom, but really not the way that he's played the game all season long. So I do feel that the Oilers' speed backed off the, you know, the Calgary Flames, not just the goaltender Markstrom, but the defense, the forwards in the neutral zone. Not having Tanev was huge, and it probably put Markstrom in a bit of a, well, I don't have my best defender. What do I do? I back off a little bit. But we're also seeing the same thing now, I believe, from Mike Smith and the Oilers having to deal with the speed of the Colorado Avalanche. So it's not, you know, surprising that all of a sudden you go against a team that is that fast and puts you on your heels that many times that you're going to back off. So I think that's what happened to the Flames when they played the Oilers, and to Markstrom especially.
Marty, for a goalie, psychologically, how difficult is it to bounce back after you give up a goal like Mike Smith did? You know, a long shot prayer where he obviously didn't see the puck, and before he knew it, it was behind him in the net. How difficult is it psychologically to bounce back from giving up a goal like that and then finding your game and not letting it sort of derail you?
It's a lot easier than getting beat on a save, on a shot that you think like, oh, that's a save I got to make, right? A good shot. Like these fluky goals, mm-hmm. like, okay, they happen once in a great while. Move on from those. I remember my second year in the American League, we're playing the playoffs against the Hamilton Bulldogs in the second round, and game one and two were in Hamilton. I don't know. There was something weird in the schedule. And we started on the road. We were the better team, but started on the road. And in game two, I gave up a shot, a goal from center ice. Like the guy slap shot from center ice. I just missed it. I whiffed on it. I was like, okay, you know what? They're not going to beat me from center ice every game. That's not going to happen. The problem is that when you get a guy in the slot and he shoots five hole and it goes through, and then you give up a blocker, a high blocker shot that you're like, oh, I should have made the save on those. And those happen more often than, you know, getting beat from 142 feet on a puck that you never saw. So, yeah, I wasn't worried about Mike Smith. That's not something that goalies really, you know, spend too much time on. These fluky goals, they happen. You move on.
Yo, Marty, I saw last night on, I think it was last night or a couple nights ago, you can correct me if it wasn't last night, but there was a Buffalo Sabres alumni event, sports event, and, you know, saw some former Sabres along with yourself. I saw Rob Ray was there, Alan May, Dave Anderchuk. You know, like, could Dave Anderchuk suit up for the Lightning and maybe help them get back in the series?
Well, he could be a net front presence on the power play. The guy scored 650 some goals. And so, okay, so the event, the NHL Alumni Association was in Buffalo for their association meetings. So you got the president of the association from teams to teams that came in. Some players came in. It was also on Zoom. So players from around, alumni from around the league were able to take it in. And then we decided to have a sports night where we had about 300 people. It was sold out at dinner. And then one of those like storytelling type of nights. So Jim Ralph, who does Toronto radio, who's unbelievable with his impressions and at hosting these type of events, was the MC. And then Brad May, myself, Dave Anderchuk, Danny Gare, and Kelly Chase were on the panel. And we told stories. And it was amazing. And so one of the jokes that Jim Ralph, when he introduced Dave Anderchuk, he goes, he was a whatever round pick of the Buffalo Sabres, played in Toronto. New Jersey, Tampa scored 652 goals and seven of them were outside the crease. Like he just, because that's where Dave Anderchuk scored everything, like from in the crease, around the crease. And he definitely could help right now Tampa on the power play with how good he was in front of the net. But man, like Kelly Chase telling stories about his first training camp, about how Gordie Howe put his arms around him and said something to the effect that, well, if they didn't know yesterday, if they didn't know you were yesterday, they know who you are now, because he chased every veterans and tried to beat them up. It was just a fantastic event.
I want to know what story you told, Marty.
Well, so basically there was three themes. There was your first NHL game or first NHL training camp that you want to tell a story. So my first NHL game was in Pittsburgh against Mario Lemieux in 1995. I was 18 years old. I got lit up like a Christmas tree in the first period. And then Ted Nolan, who was at the event, I said, thank you, Teddy, for pulling me in the second period. And then thank you for putting me back in the third, where I had a shutout in the third period. Thank you very much. They asked about pranks. some of the best pranks that were played. And we had a prank on Brian Campbell in Florida that our trainer, Jim Pizzatelli at the time, he had friends in the police force in Florida in the canine unit. So as we were leaving the game after we won, the cops pulled the bus over right outside the rink in Florida. And the dog came in on the bus and sniffed Brian Campbell and sat right next to him. And they pulled Campbell off the bus and pulled his bag. And they had put some bags of powder or pills or something in his bag. And he didn't know whose they were, but they're like, this is illegal drugs. And he was literally almost crying and peeing his pants like that. And we all knew what was going on. Lindy Ruff knew what was going on. It was fantastic. And then obviously the Ray Emery fighting, you know, they asked all of us our best fights. So, I mean, Brad May's got some good fights and Kelly Chase has got some good fights, but I had one to tell. So those are the stories we told. It was great.
Marty, just a couple more questions. Obviously, yeah. I was being tongue in cheek about Dave Andrechuk, even though you know he was looking pretty good, as you were in the other Sabres alumni. I'm not sure if Teppo Numminen was there, but I think a lot of Jets fans might be. Was he there?
No, he wasn't there. Oh, okay. But I wish he would have been there because Teppo's a mild mannered guy, but he's got some great stories too.
Yeah, had some good years. Definitely had some good years in Buffalo, but. The question that I wanted to ask you, you know, both the conference finals, you know, teams are up 2-0, obviously Colorado up 2-0 on the Oilers and the Rangers 2-0 on the Lightning. Of those two series, which team do you think has a better chance of coming back? Because right now it's not looking too good for either team.
Yeah, I would say Tampa. I actually picked the Tampa Bay Lightning to win in six. I didn't think it was going to go that route in the first two games in New York, but I'm impressed with what the Rangers have done. So good for them. I had Colorado in five. I gave the Oilers very, very little chance. And listen, if the Oilers first game was 8-6, or really it was 7-3 with a few minutes left in the second period. If the Oilers had lost 4-3 in overtime and 5-4, you know, I would say, okay, they can come back home and make some adjustments. But let's just say game one was 7-3 with 22 minutes left in the game and game two is 4-0. I don't see how the Oilers can match what Colorado has done right now. Even if Pavel Francouz is in net, I think Colorado is locked in.
You know, Marty, you focus obviously on a lot of what's going on in Buffalo and what's going on in Rochester, and the Rochester Americans made it to the third round of the AHL yep. finals here in Manitoba. You know, Moose head coach Mark Morrison told us how important it was from a development perspective to get at least two rounds of playoffs in, you know, into a player's kind of learning process because they develop. He said it's worth the equivalent of a full season. Now, here in Manitoba, of course, the Moose got bounced by Milwaukee in the first round, so they got half a season. But in Rochester, those yeah. Buffalo prospects got up until Laval, you know, beat them in 3-0. Yeah. But what do you see? How much benefit is there in Buffalo with those guys, those young guys getting playoff games and what that's going to do for them for next season?
It was huge. And I'll tell you this, my very first AHL season, I did not have a good season. I actually got sent down to the East Coast League in late February. And I only came back to Rochester a week later because Mike Bills, who was the other goalie in Rochester, hurt his knee. He was out for the season. And then I finished the season somewhat strong. And then we lost in the first round to the Philadelphia Phantoms that year. The Phantoms won the Calder Cup. But that experience of even getting beat in four, it was a best of five. We got beat in four. It carried me into the next season. I was really much better for having had, even if it was just one round, I was much better the next year for having that one round. Now, the next year, we went to the Calder Cup Finals, lost to Providence, and then I went to the NHL. And I really feel that in Rochester or in Manitoba or in Laval or in Springfield or any teams that have young prospect that need to get that maturing, the playoffs are a great way to do it. So you have J.J. Peterka, who had a really good playoffs for the Rochester Americans. Jack Quinn struggled a little bit, but played well. It just didn't translate into production, but played really well. You have Casey Fitzgerald, a defenseman who was really good. Unfortunately, they didn't have Matias Samuelsson playing because he was injured from the end of the season in Buffalo. And Peyton Krebs, you guys know Peyton Krebs from his time in Winnipeg. I mean, he looked really, really good in Buffalo. I absolutely love Peyton Krebs and how what he's going to bring to the Sabres. But it would have been easy for him to go down to Rochester and just say, you know what? I know I'm playing in Buffalo next year. Like, I'm just going to go. He was dominant. He was a leader. He was dominant. Love what Peyton Krebs did. So I got to give a shout out to James Patrick, who coached him in Winnipeg and still calls him like weekly to make sure that he gets his workouts in and he does his flush rides and all of that. So Jeep, good work on the young man.
Marty, last question for you. You mentioned Ted Nolan in one of your previous answers. Yep. You know, here in Winnipeg, we're still looking for a new head coach, or the Jets are looking for a new head coach. Now, Ted Nolan's name hasn't really been bandied about as a candidate, but in your estimation, you know, did he sort of get a bum's rush in never getting another shot behind the bench since his time in Buffalo?
Look, I loved playing for Teddy, and I didn't get to do it long. I was 18 years old. I did it for one training camp and a few games, and then Lindy Ruff came in, and I loved Lindy. Lindy was really, really good. I still love him as a coach. He's awesome. But from what I hear, everybody loved playing for Teddy. He was a player's coach. The game has developed a lot. When Teddy came back to Buffalo, I mean, it was a really, really tough time in Buffalo. I talked to those coaches all the time. He was with Brian Trottier. Arthur Serbey was there. I loved having those conversations. I think Teddy had some success when he went to the Islanders. But sometimes, I don't know the conversations that happened between Ted Nolan and some of the other teams. And I don't know if there was some bias against him. But I really liked him. I thought he did a fantastic job wherever he's been. So I thought he was going to get more of a look or a second or third or fourth chance in the National Hockey League, like a lot of coaches do. But he didn't. But I don't want to say I love our game and I love the culture of our game most 99% of the time. So I don't want to say that it was, you know, because Teddy is not a white, you know, coach that he didn't get hired. I think that teams probably went into different directions. And that's just the way it is, but I don't know. I was never in those conversations, obviously.
Marty, and we should just mention he's doing a great job with his hockey schools, with his sons, right?
So and then he went still, to Latvia.
He's still having an impact on the game, right?
He coached in Latvia, I believe, for a while and developed a lot of good hockey programs around. He's done really, really well. And he looks fantastic. I'm telling you, the guy looks like he could beat me up. Like he's thin and strong. And it's like, you know, where we tend to grow old and fat. So that's the way it goes.
Marty Biron covers the Buffalo Sabres. You know his work from TSN, RDS, MSG. And of course, his time as an NHL goalie. Marty, you're one of our best. You're one of our favorites. Thanks so much for your time this morning. Have a great rest of
your weekend.
The
question is, though, are we Marty's favorites, though?
I always say yes. Unless I have something going on, Ezra, you know, I always say yes, absolutely. Even if I'm in the woods and in the wilderness, I do it. You know it.
No, you know,
and we love you,
know,
you
every
it,
time.
Marty.
Every time you're able to come on, we love it, Marty. So we always appreciate it because you've got a lot going on with hockey and family and everything like that. So anytime is we appreciate it.
Well, you guys have a good weekend. Have a good summer, and yes, it'd be interesting to see who they hire in Winnipeg for coach and the draft coming up and free agency. So it will be a busy summer, I'm sure, in Winnipeg.
No question, Marty. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Marty.
Thanks, Marty. Marty Biron joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One of our favorites. He's been with us for so many years. Frosty Winnipeg's wondering, what's he doing in the woods?
I'll tell you what he's doing. Stealing Wi-Fi so he could get on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah.
We were interviewing him, and he was in the car.
He's doing deliveries.
He was doing, I can't remember exactly what he was doing, running around doing some errands.
Yeah.
He was with his son.
Yeah, and he couldn't get a good enough signal, so he pulled over somewhere and took the Wi-Fi that was publicly available from a grocery store or wherever it was, and it did look like he was just in this forest of trees. It was, you know, for anybody who was just tuning in, they were probably wondering what Marty was doing, but there you go, Marty.
And the reality is, and you guys know that, and you're right. I mean, we've had Marty on for, I want to say, what, 7-8 years? Like, it might even be going back further than that, but we had him on frequently on TSN 1290, but you know, he has a lot going on, right? Like we mentioned, he's got kids. But I mean, he does, you know, TSN RDS, the Instigators podcast. I mean, he's on the NHL Network Radio, NHL Network TV. Like he does a lot of media. And so we're lucky that he, you know, he comes on, you know, every few months on the show. And I mean, who better to talk about Igor Shesterkin than Marty Biron, who played with the Rangers, you know, with Henrik Lundqvist, right? So that type of insight and analysis that he gives is just phenomenal. So again, you know, I can't say enough good things about Marty, how good of a guy he is, and how lucky we have been to have him on the show for so many years.
Amen, Mr. Ginsburg. Well said on this Saturday morning, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live here on YouTube, live on all of our social media platforms. As he's at Bernstein's Deli, Mr. Ginsburg, we'll let you go get your third meal of the day in, as I'm sure you're partaking.
It's very busy in here right now. Like when I first got here at around 8:30, like there were a few tables, but now it's absolutely packed. So still a few tables left, though.
Maybe they'll turn over the table to a paying customer as opposed to a leech who's just been sitting there talking about stealing their Wi-Fi.
No, I'm going to order lunch after this. I've been having some coffee. I'm going to get an Applejack. We're good.
Drew, I can't believe we've gone the whole show. You haven't even mentioned the Jets signing of 2026 rounder Tyrell Bauer.
I leave that to you on legalcurve.com, Mr. Manuk.
No, I mean, we got to mention big, mean, right side defenseman, 6'3", I think, captain of the Seattle Thunderbirds, going up against the Edmonton Oil Kings in the WHL championship. The reality is, and it's, I think it's pertinent to Moose folks who follow the Moose, is there's going to be probably some turnover potentially with that right side of the Moose blue line with Johnny Kovacevic. My estimation will be up with the Jets as either the sixth or seventh defenseman. Leon Gavanke may clear waivers, but he's no longer waiver exempt. So that really just leaves 2019 second round pick, Simon Lundmark, who had a really good first year over here as a pro with the Manitoba Moose. He'll be probably the top pairing right side guy. So Tyrell Bauer, good opportunity for him after he signed his
Jets. He's mean, Dave, as you know, exactly. If you want to see, you know, go on YouTube and watch some of his fights.
That's right.
I mean, he's not, let's be honest, he's not a guy that provides a lot of offense.
No, not.
But, you know, just, I believe, Dave, like you posted this on the website. For those who don't know, he had a very serious, I think it was MCL or ACL. Yeah. It was a knee injury. MCL. And I'm pretty sure, Dave, the first game that he came back, he fought, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, like, the guy misses all this time, you know, hurts his knee, does the rehab, comes back, drops the mitts. The first game that he's back. So this is a guy, like, I know not everybody likes, you know, fighting, and, you know, there's less fighting in pro hockey these days, but I mean, let's be honest, like you still do, you know, need that in hockey, physical presence, maybe more so than the fighting. So I think you're right, Dave, there's a good chance he's going to play for the Moose in the 22-23 season.
Yeah.
And you know, he's going to be a guy that I think he'll be a fan favorite. I think, Dave, you'd agree with that.
And if people want to watch him, I believe from game three on of the Western Hockey League finals and all of the CHL finals are going to be on TSN. So you can check out more of him coming up, I think, next week on TSN. Yeah. As they'll be broadcasting.
Shout out to Winnipeg's Connor Roulette, by the way. He's also on the Thunderbirds. Really good player. I believe he's a Dallas draft pick.
So his brother's Chad, isn't it?
It's very clever, Dave. Lead up to the Memorial Cup on TSN, so you can watch some of the games there involving Jets prospects.
Hold on.
What?
Just gonna give you were going to give a shout-out to our sponsors. I'm going to give a shout-out to my parents. Their anniversary today. Happy anniversary to my mom and dad. So many more. 49.
49. You have a big party planned for next year then?
Well, I haven't started yet. You have to wait till 49 happens, and then they can start thinking about number 50.
Exactly. Make sure they get to 49. Maybe, you know.
My dad is a divorce attorney, so I mean, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, you know, everyone's familiar with the Diamond Jubilee with the Queen, but this is going to be the Manuk Jubilee.
There you go.
Well done there, Ezra. I want to say a big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make this show. They make the post-game show and the website a possibility. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zapia Group Realty, our friends at Betway, Bernstein's Deli. That's where Ezzy is this morning. Go say hi to him if you're around there. He's eating. He's going to be eating a big sandwich momentarily.
Yeah, there's still a few pancakes left.
Tough Duck, our friends at Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. As a reminder, if there's any Jets news, it's going to be on illegalcurve.com in the course of the week. If there's any really big Jets news, maybe we'll even pop up and do a pop-up show. Follow us on all of our social medias, and we will let you know if that was to occur. If not, we'll be back next Saturday with another edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, tell your friends, tell your family. The best place to be every Saturday morning is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Scott Billick. Big thanks to Marty Biron. Big thanks for Dave Minuke. Big thanks to Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.